Today's program is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, a co-working and event space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
And welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Ashley Eddy, executive chef of Santina, an Amalfi Coast-inspired restaurant by Major Food Group in New York City. Ashley helped launch Santina as an line cook and worked her way all the way up to executive chef in just 3 years, which is amazing.
Thank you.
She is born and bred in Brooklyn, New York. And she was inspired by her grandmother's cooking. Ashley.
Hi.
Welcome to Hungry Society.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on this very busy, busy Thursday.
It's weird. I don't know why we're so busy. There's a lot going on a Thursday for us at Santina.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I said in the intro that you opened Santina as a line cook. Santina, by the way, I should back up, is a delicious, delicious restaurant. Right under the High Line in New York City in the Meatpacking District. And the menu, well, how would you describe the menu?
I would say it's exactly what we call it. It's coastal Italian. It's very light Italian fare. It's not traditional by any means. We have our signature spag crab dish, a spaghetti blue crab, which is traditional in Italy. But the way we do it, it's our own. And that's the idea behind all the food. It's looking at it on the plate in front of you, it might seem simple, but there's a lot of that goes into it, and that makes it special. Mm-hmm. So we say, yeah, Italian, coastal Italian, but with a kind of a spin on it.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get started in cooking?
My grandmother, my family stuff, you know. I would always cook next to her. I was her little helper. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I think she knew before I knew that I might be a chef, because she would have me cook for the family sometimes. Randomly after school, she'd have something for me and say, here, cook this for us. Just like that. Like, it might be steak one night, it might be chicken, or she'd say, make us a soup, something like that. And that was my project. Like, randomly, she'd pick something for me to make. And from there, it just became one of my passions. I didn't think that I would be a chef as a kid. I just liked to cook. I did watch a lot of cooking shows. Every Sunday, I would watch PBS. I would watch Lydia, Jacques Pepin, and there was a show called Colomeco Show. He was a chef that would go to other restaurants and eat and, like, explore the kitchens. And that kind of appealed to me, but it still never occurred to me that I could be a chef.
So we have the PBS thing in common, because when I was growing up, my mom, we didn't have cable. So I would, like, live by PBS, and I'd watch all those cooking shows and, like, Ming Tsai, and, yep, all those same thing.
What's the show? Martin Yan? If Yan can't cook, so can you.
He's, like...
That's one of my favorites.
He's, like, one of the originals. Yeah. Like, he's still very entertaining to watch. Mm-hmm. So when was your grandmother, like, asking you to cook after school? Like, how old were you?
That was, like, junior high school.
Wow.
Junior high school. I used to go over there every single day. While my mom was at work, and then she'd come pick me up. And while I was there, though, I would, you know, cook and didn't do my homework. Just cooked and hung out. And, you know, that was just kind of what solidified it for me. So I spent a lot of time at grandma's house, and so I got to see a lot of different things. I never really took it that seriously until high school, though. Mm. When I knew, like, when everyone's picking their major and what college they would go to, nothing interested me. And then I happened to walk into my guidance counselor's office, and I saw a brochure for Johnson & Wales. And obviously, that's one of the best schools. So that's when I knew. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I could be a chef. That's what I'll do.
Was it like, I didn't know I could go to school for this? Or was it like, okay, I guess I'll do
that? It just never occurred to me, because growing up, it's the same things, doctor, lawyer, something like that, or like a city job. It's no one ever thinks that way. Like, in my family, no one ever really thought outside the box in that way. I'm one of the first in my family, I have my cousins, to do something this different. Mm. You know, it just wasn't a thing. And so when I said I wanted to be a chef, and when I started looking into it, I was supported, but there were a lot of questions. Like, what is it going to be like? Are you going to make any money? How far can you go? Like, no one thinks that. even though you see chefs on TV, I still didn't think about it for myself until I had the brochure in my hand, and it became a possibility.
Yeah, I definitely understand that, because like as a food writer, I still get a lot of those questions, like, wait, so how do you get paid?
What
exactly do you do, like, when you write these stories? And it's also like, you know, a creative field too is always seems a bit more risky,
right,
to people, because, you know,
it's not stable. I don't know, that's just how I am. I never saw myself with a city job. Like, there was a period where I had graduated culinary school. I didn't graduate. I'm a dropout, by the way. Culinary school dropout. But I was in between jobs, and was finding it really hard to find a job. And it was suggested to me that I just get a city job. And if I have to just do something, I don't want to do it. I want to do something that I care about. I'm not somebody that can go to a job that I hate or just be there because I should be there or have to be there. I need to want to be in this place. And I only want to be in the kitchen. So.
Yeah, I keep coming back to, like, you know, you were at Santina when it opened as a line cook. And you moved from that to executive chef in 3 years. Like, that's really impressive. Like, they must have seen, like, a lot of, like, dedication and tenacity and creativity for that to happen.
I think that's true. I think it's also just cooking on a line at Santina in the beginning was the hardest job. It was the hardest kitchen I've ever worked in. It still is. Everyone says that. Everyone that has gone through that kitchen as a line cook says the same thing. It's hard. The kitchen is small, but we make it work. We do a lot of covers in a small space. And in the beginning, especially, and like when we were reviewing, it's so much pressure. There's so much pressure because you have people to come in, food writing, important people eating your food, like dining at this restaurant. You want to make sure everything's perfect. And if you don't feel like you can do it, it hurts. So I think getting through that and like pushing through and being a successful line cook is probably what they saw. And then I stuck it out when others didn't. Others, it's too hard and they quit. And I was like, I can figure it out. And I did it. And I just ended up, you know what I mean? It's like that. I'm one of the originals at Santina. Like, all of the other chefs are gone. Everyone that was above me then doesn't exist anymore. So, you know.
Speaking of important guests, I read that Lady Gaga is a huge fan of Santina. Like, a massive fan.
I didn't know that, but I mean, she needs to come through on the day that I'm there. So right? That would be amazing. I would love that. I love Lady Gaga.
Yeah. She's, just so you know, like, it's in print that she loves Santina so much. So people who are really good at being line cooks always fascinate me, because I was a line cook for a little bit and I was terrible at it, and moved to front of the house soon after and was way better at that. What's a line cook shift at Santina like? Like, how intense is it?
If it's a day shift, it's pretty chill because you are just prepping mostly and you're getting ready for the PM line cooks to come in. But if it's the same, the AM shift, and it's busy, it's like, crap, like, you're cooking and prepping. And it can be a lot. Like, it's not an easy job by any means at night, on like, especially the weekends. Just having the space that we have, it's hard. It can be rough. You know, I work the line now, and I'm like, how did I ever do this when it was busier? I have to ask myself, like, how did I get this done when we were pushing out 400 covers a night? I don't know how. Like, it gets crazy, and I'm always proud of my line cooks when they can push through, because when I first started, there were a lot of times where I and a lot of the other chefs next to me wanted to leave like, because it just gets to be too much. And yeah, I'm always proud of them when they can. It's just hard. It's busy, and there's a lot of things. Like, at the end of it, like I said before, on the plate, it looks so simple, but one dish can be like 14 ingredients.
Right.
And it just takes a lot to get to that end result. And it's every single pick, every single time. So just imagine just doing that over and over and, like, having to just go, go, go. You don't have a chance to chill. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot.
Yeah. How do you approach creating new dishes for Santino, like dishes to put on the menu?
It depends. Sometimes things just come to me that I want to play with. I'll get an ingredient in my head or a technique in my head, and I just go from there. Sometimes my bosses will tell me what they would like to see, and then they'll just say, hey, I'll do something with this, and I'll try to work with it. Like, I just came up with caprese sandwich. It's, you know, basil, mozz, tomato, but then there's fried eggplant on it. So it's basically eggplant parmesan sandwich. But when you see it and you eat it, it's not like any other one. It's crispy and light. There are layers of eggplant, and it's so good. But it's, I come up with dishes randomly. It's never like, it's never anything I sit and think about. It's always something that just happens in my head as I'm going about my day. If I'm watching TV, if I'm like on a train, I always have a notebook with me because I like to write things down as opposed to putting it in my phone. That sounds good, and I write it down. Like, oh, I'm going to do a new scallop crudo this week. What do we have in house that is still Santino but different than whatever we're doing right now? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of random. It's never anything that I study. Every once in a while when I'm asked to put up a dish for tastings, every Thursday I have a meeting with the chefs and owners and the company. And a lot of times they've given me a week to think about it, but I don't figure it out until that morning, because this is how I am. Like, I can do really well in depression. That's essentially what it is to be a line cook anyhow.
Right.
That's it. It's kind of random.
That's amazing. I've also read that you really take your role of leader and mentor very seriously for your team. What are some of the lessons that you hope you can, like, impart to them as you, like, lead them?
Don't do it just to do it. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I have so many cooks that didn't start out as cooks or with the aspiration at all. Mm-hmm. And that now, like, they really want to be chefs. I have porters that are now sous chefs. I have porters that are now some of my best cooks. And I taught them to just, like, stick with it and, you know, commit to it. And it just, being on a line and having your coworkers around you depending on you and living up to that, that's what I would like to teach to them, because you are an asset here. If mm-hmm. one cook calls out, we're kind of screwed, you know? And so, like, that's one thing I'm actually seeing that I've given them, like, to take everyone else into account, to commit to this role. I'm like, if you're going to take it, if you want to be a line cook here at Santina, you need to dedicate yourself to it, because we're relying on you. Mm. I do, and I make sure that they know that. I think that's kind of what I give them. And I'm, you know, I'm always get everything that I know I want to teach them, like how to be a leader, how to take ownership of everything. I don't give you anything that I haven't done or I'm not willing to do myself.
Right.
I think that's the thing. Mm. Like, I've been in your shoes. I've been a line cook for 10 years and I've gotten really good at it because I just stick with it. And I, yeah. What was the question? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Okay. About what you want to, like, impart and, like, teach your staff in the kitchen. So I, on the way here, I was thinking, you know, about a conversation. I was thinking, do I know any other Black women executive chefs in New York City? And I was like, I think, I don't know if Sam at Henry has the exec chef title. She might be Sue. I'm not sure. But there's not a lot of head chefs that are Black women in New York City, which is crazy to me.
Right.
Because there are lots of Black women here. And there are Black women cooking as well. It's weird to ask you if you ever think about that, but
I think about that. I think about being the only sometimes. Yeah. I do. Up until Santina, honestly, I hadn't worked with as many Black Americans or African people. Like, mm-hmm. it's pretty diverse at Santina. I've worked a lot of places, and I've been, like I said, the only... my first restaurant, actually, there might have been one other Black girl, and she was front of house. But at Santina, it's so diverse. Like, people from everywhere, all shades of brown. It's very diverse in that way. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, there aren't a lot of Black women cooking in New York. Maybe mm-hmm. other places, but not in New York that I've seen. I've worked a lot of places, and I just don't see it often. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, why do you think that is? Because, I mean, there are a lot of restaurant jobs here, and chefs are always talking about, oh, I need to hire more people. There's mm-hmm. not enough in the labor pool, and blah, 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 blah. But I don't see, like, different kinds of people getting jobs right. at these restaurants.
I don't think they're applying, honestly, mm-hmm. because I always have ads up, and I get the same people. I get everyone I get, they look just like the last person that came in. I've hired a few Black American people, but not a lot. Like, not I don't get a lot of inquiries. Mm. I really don't know why that is. Mm. No idea, honestly.
Does that ever feel like pressure, like to be the only one?
No.
No.
I feel fine with that. I mean, hopefully someone sees me and thinks maybe right now they can't see themselves in that position, and they see me and now they feel like they can. I don't know. I don't know why they're not applying. I don't know why we don't get those people, but if I can start a trend and they, you know, jump on, then that's great. And if not, then I don't know. I mean, maybe they just don't feel it the way we do. Some people, they love to cook, but they don't want it to be their career.
Right, right.
For me, I don't really see myself being in any other industry. So, mm-hmm.
So when you're not in the kitchen, I've seen a few pictures of you, like, on a surfboard, on, was it a jet ski?
I was on a dune buggy. A dune buggy.
Yes. Yeah. When you're not in the kitchen, you are, like, adventurous and, like, traveling, it seems.
So the two things you're referring to were company trips. So,
oh wow,
right. So the dune buggy was in Vegas. We had I want to say, like, a company appreciation, like, retreat. It was for, like, the senior management and people that have been with the company for, like, 4 years and more. So we were in the middle of the desert. We hiked. And then we went dune buggy riding. It was great. Like, I had a blast. And I don't think I would have thought to do that otherwise, right. But it was fun. The picture of me on the surfboard, we were, what's it called? I don't know, paddleboarding?
Yeah.
My first time doing that, I'm a decent swimmer, but not good enough to be way out in the water. So I was definitely scared at first. But I was like, I'm just going to try and what happens. I fell in the water twice and it's fine. I didn't die. It was, but I had a blast. It was fun. And I think I can do it again. I'm pretty adventurous. I've been skydiving.
Wow, where?
In Long Island.
In Long Island?
I went for my 25th birthday. It was a blast. I was scared to death. Mind you, I will not get in a roller coaster to this day. I'm scared of roller coasters, but I went skydiving.
But you jumped out of a plane?
It was, I don't know. It was fun.
Where
it
was really the paddle boarding, by the way? Where were you?
That was in the Hamptons.
The Hamptons.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was nice.
That's amazing. Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of Chef Ashley Eddy of Santina.
One Hundred Bogart has made much progress over the past year since their grand opening. They are a growing community of professional freelancers, entrepreneurs, and startups. Their dedicated team guarantees you receive a productive and worry-free work environment. 100 Bogart is currently filling up their 2-person to 12-person private offices. The spacious pop-up gallery, premier rooftop, and brand new full floor with terrace are available for your next event. Podcast rooms, conference rooms, and meeting spaces are also available for booking. 100 Bogart hosts events like art exhibitions, pop-up stores, product launches, and fashion shows. Heritage Radio Network is a proud member of the 100 Bogart community and often holds events in the building. Visit 100bogart.com to schedule a tour and learn more.
All right, so we are back with Chef Ashley Eddy of Santina.
Hi.
So now we're going to get a bit more, personal.
Okay.
What part of Brooklyn did you grow up in?
Crown Heights.
Crown Heights. Mm-hmm. That's not far from here.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm still getting my Brooklyn geography down. I've been here for about two years.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. And Brooklyn's massive. I feel like people just say Brooklyn and it's like, what part?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
It's huge. So did your family have any like specific dishes that you guys would eat together? Like, I know you cooked a lot growing up.
Let me think. Yeah, I mean, we got together mostly, obviously, around the holidays. And there's obviously always turkey, there's always ham, there's always collard greens, mac and cheese, traditional, like, Southern American food. Mm. Yeah, I think that's, I mean, where are you from?
I grew up in Maryland.
Maryland?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the same traditional, my family's from North Carolina, so a lot of pork and everything, which is delicious.
Yeah, which is nice.
So good. So yeah, collard greens, mac and cheese, homemade stuffing, homemade gravy. My grandma makes the best carrot cake that I still can't figure out because there's no recipe, because she will just take a mug of this and some of that.
Oh, yeah. Those recipes.
So annoying because you'll never know how to make it the way she does. But yeah, that's one thing I can remember from my childhood that was one of my favorite things that she would make. I remember taking it to school for our bake sales, and the teachers would never sell it. They would just take it home.
What?
They would just take it home.
They would take it home.
I promise you. I promise you. She would send me with it to school, and they were like, oh, no, don't worry about it.
This is okay. You know, we don't need this. The table's full. We don't need it.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever go out to eat, or did you have, like, a takeout spot that you liked?
We used to go out to eat rarely. We used to go to Red Lobster, Sizzler, but not often. But when we did, it was special occasions and went to places like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or no. Red Lobster. I don't know the last time I've seen a Sizzler.
It's been a minute. Like, I haven't seen one either since the last time I was there when I was preteen.
Wow.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We definitely, though, where I grew up in Maryland, had the Red Lobster.
Yeah.
And it had a line, like, every Friday and Saturday night. It was like the date spot, the family spot.
Definitely too many of us to go often by special occasions. Yeah. It's hard to round up all of my cousins and aunts and uncles to be in one place.
Like, how many people are we talking?
13 grandchildren, right?
Wow.
I think something like that. Pretty big family. Hard to round us all up. Even bigger now, obviously. Now a bunch of little cousins running around.
So when you're not at Santina, where do you go out to eat? Or do you?
I don't. I've recently gotten better at it. I'm making a conscious effort to get out and eat more. But sometimes you just get wrapped up in, like, work and hanging out with your friends, because a lot of the people I hang out with are from work. So we just, you know, hang out after work and go to a dive or something like that. But I've been putting more effort into getting out and eating at nice places, because it's just nice to treat yourself that way sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the last place I went to was The Grill, which is in the company. It was really, really good. It was really good.
I'm going to say that your grill experience is different than the normal people's, because you work in the company.
Sure. That's true. And they're always really good to family. But I think that everyone that dines there, regardless of in company or not, you're going to have a good time. Every one of these restaurants in the company is an experience. Is an experience. Santina, you get, like, this, like, fun, upbeat, just, like, light, bright experience, especially in the daytime. Dirty French is, like, where you want to be before you go to a club. If you're going out that night, it is. It's, like, it's just, like, dark and sexy. The Grill is fancy, and, like, you want to get dressed up, and you want to just, like, be, you know, pinkies in the air type of it is. It's like that. It's beautiful. And then a lobster club. It's the same. It's fancy. It's, you know, fine dining. It's everything is like so well done. It feels every restaurant is just different from the last. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have most chefs tend to have like a place where they'll do like some carry out or take out if they don't feel like cooking. Do you have a spot like that that you like go to often or order from often?
What's this place called? I gotta look at my caviar. I love caviar. I either go to Shake Shack, mm-hmm. but there's another place that it's so sad. On my caviar, it has a section that says your usuals. It's just like my order's just right there. It's ready to go. What's this place called? It's a barbecue place.
It's a barbecue place. Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember it right now, but they have a spicy chicken sandwich that I love, potato salad, and they used to do these really good onion rings, but they don't do them anymore. I don't know why. Because they're like, I don't know how they get them to stay crispy from wherever they are to wherever I live. Like that hour difference, and they come to me, they're still like hot and crispy. I don't know where it is now. I can't find it, but yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to let me places. Know. Because I love good this. Barbecue.
Yeah. And that salad was really good. It's in Waynesburg. It's expensive, but it's really good.
Yeah. So nice. So, okay, from the best to the worst, can you talk about one of the like worst dining experiences you've ever had? You don't have to name the restaurant, but you can if you want to.
I was at a place having dinner with my sister, and we was, you know, it's a cute little place, nothing fancy. But they dropped a knife in her foot. So we're at the table, and she's bleeding from her foot. It happened to, like, hit her right in a vein. So she's literally gushing blood at the table. I'm sorry.
Wait, this was a steak knife?
This is a steak knife.
It fell into her
into
foot.
Into her foot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. They were very apologetic, and luckily we were done with our meal anyway. But I'm looking at him like, if they drop a bill on this table,
yeah, they did not,
mind.
Right?
He came over with the little book and everything. I opened it. I was like, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Like, they were
okay.
It was an apology.
It wasn't a receipt.
It wasn't a receipt. When he dropped it, I was like, you cannot be serious. My sister's sitting there bleeding from her foot, and it wasn't like a little drop of blood. She was leaking blood.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But
wow, yeah. That usually people are like, you know, we waited a long time for the check at this one spot, and like, no, that your sister physical damage.
She was injured.
Wow.
I don't really have any of the other like stories of waiting too long or. Oh, there was a place, in Brooklyn that I ate at, that just was not good. I was upset because, it was. Black owned.
Mm.
So I was mad at that. I was mad that it wasn't good. The service wasn't good. And no one cared that I didn't enjoy my meal.
Mm.
So that kind of sucks because you can't please everybody as a chef. But there's certain things that you do to make the guests feel better about their experience. And I didn't get that. And I feel like sometimes people think that they don't have to go above and beyond because they're in Brooklyn. And that aggravates me.
Right.
Because why don't I get the same experience because I'm not in the city? I've heard people say that too. Like, I've had chefs that I've worked with say that it's in Brooklyn, doesn't matter. Oh, there's nowhere good to eat, it doesn't matter. I'm like, it matters. Like, I'm paying to be here. Like, this is not a free meal. Like, I should be able to go out and have a good experience. And even if I don't enjoy the food, the service should be good. You know,
right.
And not where you're going to eat if you're going to enjoy the food. It doesn't always work out that way. But there are certain things you can do front of house wise that can help you make you feel better about the experience. And I don't want to say the name of the place. It's not worth it.
It's funny you say that. I was having a conversation with a friend recently about service I've had in Brooklyn, where it's just like you sit down at the bar and they're pretty much like, why are you here? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm here for a drink. Can I please have a menu?
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying money.
Right.
Like, it's just like, what's the disconnect here? Like, why is the service that way? It's interesting that chefs have said to you, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
It kind of sucks. Maybe I want to have a restaurant in Brooklyn, and it certainly won't be that. It will be a fine dining, even if it's not fine dining, you will get that experience. You'll feel like it because you would have attentive service, mm-hmm. hopefully food that you enjoy, and it won't be what people think is your typical Brooklyn restaurant. You know, it'll be, because there are some really great restaurants in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So when people say that, I'm like, even if it's not a well-known place, I know what it'll take you to eat good food in Brooklyn. Okay. Even if it's not like the fanciest sit-down restaurant, I can take you to a shack up the block that has the best jerk chicken, you know, or whatever it is. So I hate when people act like it's, you can't find good food in Brooklyn. Or if you do, it has to be in Williamsburg. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So, okay, well, now I need to know, like, can you give me, like, maybe three spots in Brooklyn that, like, they don't have to be fine dining or sit down or anything. Like, one day in Brooklyn, you can hit three spots. Where are you going?
If I...
And money's no object. It's all... Someone else is paying for it.
Well.
In that case.
I mean, if I want to have West Indian food, I'm going to C&J in Flatbush. They have a few locations. Line's always long. The service is not the best, but it's like just go in, take out. It's delicious. It's always good.
What are you having there?
I'm probably going to have jerk chicken, rice and peas. Because, I mean, that's what you go there for. That's what you go there for.
Yeah.
Or oxtail is one of my favorite things to have. Oxtail, rice and peas, mac and cheese. There's... Sunday in Brooklyn is one of my favorites right now, too. I've been there several times. I love going there for brunch. It was, I can't remember the restaurant it was before it was Sunday Brooklyn, but I've been there a few times. I'm drawing a blank. But there's another place I want to go to called Llama Inn. I don't know if you heard of it.
Yeah,
Llama Inn. I've been meaning to get over there.
Same. I haven't been there yet.
I need to go. I keep saying I'm going to go. But getting to Williamsburg is just... hassle for me from where I live. I'm one of those Brooklyn nights that I'm against Williamsburg.
You're just anti Williamsburg.
I'm anti Williamsburg. I've only recently started warming up to Williamsburg and coming here more often because they have really good restaurants. So I can't lie, I can't deny that.
Right.
But you know, there was a time when you wouldn't dare walk into step foot in Williamsburg. Like you would be scared.
Oh really?
I'm telling you. I talk about with my sister all the time, like, people go to Williamsburg? Like, before it got popping, before it got to where it is now, you would never go over there.
It's scary in a different way. Like, it's scary, like, you have to push through, like, Whole Foods people.
Oh, my God.
And, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the farmer's market crew.
It's so packed.
It's so busy.
Always. There's never a time when I've been there, it's not jam-packed with people.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Very good to know. Okay, it was Sunday in Brooklyn, potentially Llama Inn, C&J, and what was the last one?
I don't think I said the last one. For Brooklyn? I don't eat out a lot in Brooklyn. Because I tend to go to places, like, right after work. Am I bad Brooklynite?
Well, then that's perfect, then.
Am I a bad Brooklynite?
Well, what would be the, like, last stop in Manhattan and then you go home?
High Street on Hudson.
Okay.
So good. It's right around the corner from Santina. Mm-hmm. I think maybe two blocks away. There or Beatrix Inn.
Okay, yeah.
It's not far from walking distance. I've been there a few times after work for a drink and their burger, their dry age burger.
So High Street on Hudson, for listeners who aren't familiar, there's a location in Philly and then they opened one in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Really good homemade pastas. And breads. Mm-hmm. And then Beatrix Inn is run by a female chef and meat centric.
Yeah.
Angie Mar,
yes. Yeah.
Meat centric and.
You have a good memory. My memory's terrible.
It's kind of my job, though. Yeah. Like this is what I do. So, okay. So, my last question for you, if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be? What are you eating and who's invited?
My last meal in a restaurant.
And it doesn't have to be in a restaurant, but...
You mean it's my last meal because I'm terminally ill and this is my last night on the planet?
This is it, yep.
I think it was my last night on Earth. I think that it's not in a restaurant. It's in my home and it's with my family. And my grandma is definitely there because she's a big part of why I cook. And my mom, too, obviously. She's a big part of my cooking for a different reason. Because single mom, I used to cook for us. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's my family, and I'm thanking them. Because they're all supportive, and they're all part of the reason why I'm a chef in some aspect. I've had family members that have cooked and worked in restaurants. So it's like, it's a family thing. And I think that that's what it would be like. And I would just be cooking for them and enjoying what is probably sad.
Their company?
Enjoying their company, yeah. I think that's true for me.
Oh, I should have also said you can invite anyone, living, dead, celebrity, historic figure, anybody.
Oh, you didn't say that.
Whoever you want.
Anthony Bourdain is there.
Yeah.
Love him. Sorry, R.I.P. Beyonce is there because I love Beyonce. Sorry. People hate on Beyonce, but she's an inspiration to me. I don't know. Who else would I want to be? Oprah's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love a strong black woman. The introvert. What? Listen, it's not... I can't name one right now. Maybe that's on me that's direct... That's a chef that I'm looking at for that. So, yeah.
Wow.
Do you know
that's a good... like Leah Chase and... Carla Hall and...
Yeah, I know Carla Hall.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as far as...
I want more of us.
For sure.
Yeah.
More, please. Well, you're leading it, so...
I'm trying.
Yeah. Ashley, thank you for being on the show.
Of course, this was fun.
Yeah, I feel like you have to come back at some point and we gotta do this again and revisit all the things we talked about.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you so much. And please check out Santina. Do you have any social media handles you want to drop for listeners?
Sure. My Instagram handle is Chardonnay and Tacos. That's the only way. I'm only on Instagram, and I'm hardly ever on Instagram, but I do post all my new dishes and my dining experiences. It's not a bunch of selfies, so it's more interesting than that. So, Chardonnay and Tacos. On Instagram.
That's a great handle.
Thank you.
It's really great. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week on A Hungry Society.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please... join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.